Let's do it. Let's see. 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
And you are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news, according to Variety, the never-ending story, you heard that right, folks, by Michael, is it Ende or End? I'm not sure if you pronounce
it. The Luck Dragon?
Yeah, so that is being adapted once more into film. The project will be overseen by Michael Ende Productions. I don't know if it's Ende or End, I'm sorry.
It's Michael Never Ende.
Seesaw Films, known for Heartstopper and Slow Horses. So that's really exciting. I mean, okay, so there's a couple reasons why it's really exciting, and a couple reasons why I'm like, okay, so...
His name is so perfectly punnable.
Okay, so did you see the 1984 movie? You said Luck Dragon, so I'm assuming...
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure, Okay. It's been a minute, but yeah.
It's a cult classic. I mean, it's such a cool movie. I think it totally holds up. I just watched it like fairly recently. I read the book with my mom. It was like one of the rare books that my mom like read with me when I was a kid. I was like obsessed with this movie when it came out.
People were really into it.
I love it. I love it so much. I'm really excited to talk about it, actually. But I don't really remember like that much about the book. And apparently that first movie doesn't really cover most of the, not most of, but like a good amount of what's actually in that book. And then the second movie, like the weird sequel, which I thought the weird second movie is like pretty cool, honestly, like the weird bird guy and stuff. I thought it was like pretty cool. But anyway, apparently that first movie didn't super cover everything, so I think they should make it into a show, honestly. I mean, it'd be cool if they made it into like a mini series, or not like a whole 5 seasons of just total never-ending, like we don't need like a never-ending story cinematic universe or anything like that.
No.
But it would be cool if they could flesh it out like a little bit more, because I mean that book is really important to fantasy, and I think that cult classic movie is really important to fantasy movies.
But it's kind of like, it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie. You
and
know, like
the
cult classic
is
never good.
Yeah,
I'm for a show, man. I'm with you 100%. Take the time. Put in a show.
But see, the other thing with it is I was looking at some of the discourse on Reddit. Some people are kind of worried about it, and it makes a lot of sense that people are kind of worried about it, because on the one hand, you've got like this cool, like classic, very niche, like 80s movie, right? It's got the 80s soundtrack to it. It's got the 80s kind of like veneer,
yeah.
the cinematography, the production style, everything.
You can see the dirt on the real prints, you know?
That's what people really like about it. On the other hand, we've done a pretty good job at adapting some things, but not everything. So I'm just like a little, it's like there's no way they're going to carry over.
Do you think they've gotten more adaptions right than wrong? I feel like they haven't.
I don't know. I think it's like, it's pretty
like 40-60 towards the negative.
Like it's such a weird conversation, man, because like sometimes like with like a good example is like The Witcher. Like the first season of The Witcher is really, really solid. Like it's very, very cool.
It's fun.
I know that a lot of big fans of the books don't super love it, but I mean I've read the first one, at least The Last Wish, and I thought it was like, I mean, it captured the tone pretty well. They got Geralt right. I mean, like a lot of that first season was really solid. And then like it kind of goes a little bit off the rails, and I didn't even finish the third season. So that's why it makes the conversation a little harder to have when you're asking like, are people like mostly getting these adaptations right? Because it's like sometimes they do, and then they don't later. Like that, I thought the first season of Wheel of Time was pretty solid, and then I couldn't even get through the second season.
Yeah, I haven't even tried to watch the second season based upon that, because the first one was not great, but it wasn't like bad, you know.
It's rough, because I mean there's other adaptations, like I mean, you know, you got your Lord of the Rings, obviously, and like your like the Jurassic Park, and you know, even like you really seem to like the Avatar show, like the live action adaptation. A lot of people seem to like the One Piece adaptation. Like I think it works. It just depends on so
sometimes
many things.
Man, I couldn't decide whether I hated or loved One Piece the entire time I was watching it. Like the live action, I'm
That's
not
funny.
Sure about the anime, but the live action was just so like, it was filmed as if it was an anime, like in the style of an anime, but it wasn't an anime, and so it's, there's like some really weird elements and kind of like awkwardness that's added to it, you know, because they did that.
But that's the thing with adapting these movies and you know, reviving these old franchises and stuff like that. I think that like the nerd in me is like, that's awesome. I want to see that for sure. But then like the more kind of like hypercritical nerd in me is like, these projects, they get so like, there's so many moving parts to them, and there's so many people in the room that want different things. And it's such a precipitous like venture. It's like at any moment I feel like these productions just like totally fall apart, and everything just doesn't I think that like a lot of times, like people, like whole studios are probably going in, like writers and directors and producers and actors and everybody, they're going in with like these intentions, like let's make this as good as it can possibly be. Let's be as true to this thing as we possibly can. Let's make the best TV show slash movie ever. And then it all just gets lost in the sauce. And like, there's just all kinds of weird stuff that happens with that industry where you kind of get left with this product that's like, ah, that's kind of the best we could do considering like we had directors leaving and writers leaving and people getting hired on and like, you know, people having different visions for what they wanted. And we kind of had to like make everybody happy.
Dude, it's so hard to organize that many people and to keep them consistent over a large period of time.
I can't imagine. It's hard to organize you and me.
Like, I know. You and me have a hard time. I know.
And we... So funny.
I was head grip for a play once, and that was my job, was organizing all of the actors who are kind of pathologically a flitty bunch, you know, and it can be hard to herd. Yeah, as far as the, I think that it's true that the best pieces of cinema that we have ever produced or will ever produce will be adaptations straight up, because those are like the best stories. But like, inevitably there's going to be a certain group of them, you know, you like mentioned everyone's intentions going into it. And I think a lot of people have the best intentions, but like some people don't, they're just like trying to milk the title for more money, you know,
maybe especially as a franchise goes on to
totally, you know, it's, you'd think they'd want to divorce and find something that was not so laden with expectations from the like viewer's eye, you know. I mean, I get the like there's money already attached to that brand and everything, but still you have to like
that's what it
you
is.
Have to stay in this sort of track, and it doesn't really allow for expressive freedom. And like, you know, what's this next generation's Never-Ending Story going to be like? Let's make new things, stop making remaking the old.
I don't know,
I read the summary for Never-Ending Story because it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if there's people that are listening right now that don't know what Never Ending Story is, and you've just been kind of lost this whole time.
Let me hit you with this.
Let everybody know what it is for sure.
Atreyu is the main character in Michael Ende's 1984 fantasy novel, The Never Ending Story. He is a greenskin warrior from the grassy ocean with olive green skin and blue black hair. In the story, Atreyu was called upon to save the childlike empress when the nothing begins to destroy Fantasia. The empress gives Atreyu the Arin, a medallion that protects him, and he sets off to find Uyalala, an invisible oracle who may know the cure. Atreyu is aided by a luck dragon named Falcor.
Falcor!
Classic adventure story, but it's... It's kind of complicated, man. I kind of forgot all the moving pieces to it.
Oh yeah,
I just remember like
there's a lot going on. Yeah, I love Falcor actually. That was like probably my first. That was my first like big, like falling in love with a big giant creature in one of these movies. You know what I mean? Where
totally,
like, I'm sure my eyes were just like, oh my god, this is amazing.
I kind of feel like the air bison is a like direct pull of
maybe
like that sort of relationship, Appa. You know? Yeah, exactly. Appa's sound kind of that archetype of character.
I think that with all these adaptations and stuff, it's like, just keep doing them. You know what I mean? Like there's some things hit, some things miss.
Totally. Just try not to do adaptations of adaptations, you know, like try to do stuff maybe that's only been rinsed once. Or it's like, I just don't like the fact that there's already like more Harry Potters into production. It's like, leave it alone. Let it just settle for a little bit. There's bunches of stories on the authors that are getting awards every day.
For sure.
Go grab one.
But these studios are always going to do the sure thing, right?
I mean,
and it sucks. Like I totally like from like a fan perspective, like I totally understand what you're saying.
Art should be bold and they're cowards.
I understand. I 100% agree with you, but yeah, I mean, you know what's absolutely going to make money? Like if somebody was like, okay, we're going to either make the Greenbone Saga or we're going to do Harry Potter again. Every single studio head would be like, let's do Harry Potter
like, for sure.
Yo, you mean those movies that made billions of dollars?
Even the ones that we kind of failed at still did great. Like,
And I'm with you, but like Chad and listeners, I'm with you. Like I don't care to see another Harry Potter. I don't care.
No. Like, you can't beat the theme song. It's all the best.
I do want to see these adaptations of things like the Greenbone Saga or the First Law or Farseer or like, I mean, even stuff like Duncan Egg, which I think they are working on with like in the Game of Thrones universe. That kind of stuff is really cool. The kind of other shorter stories of franchises that have already kind of succeeded, unless it starts to do the cash cow thing. Like, it's, unless it starts to do like the, you know, like with Peter Jackson's Hobbit movies, where it's like, okay, well, we're going to cut corner and do CGI, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, when he's asked about that, they're like, why'd you do that? And he's like, well, The Hobbit is so much more whimsical. We had to do CGI so that we
could. Right. It made sense.
It's like,
artistically on, to do CGI.
Like, no, it didn't. No, it didn't. It was
you were
cheaper
just tired
to bring
of building
those
giant buildings and little buildings. Yeah. Like duplicating everything.
So I'm really excited for another never ending story. But if it's bad, the cool thing is I can go back and read the book and I can go back and watch the cool movie from the 80s. So that's why I'm cool with what it just make the art, do the thing. If it's bad, it's bad. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't offend me if it's bad. I think it's funny sometimes when it's bad. And I'm like, wow, they really dropped the ball with that. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because like the unfortunate things where we mentioned like art, you know, should be dangerous or whatever. It's like, with those old school movies, you have so many different fields, occupational fields that requires the best at that field in order to do that thing. Like you have the person who's making the costumes or who's making the puppets, the puppeteers, the movers of them, the voice actors. And so each one of those is in its own way, like a little art form. And so the movie results in this like flourishing of like art and beauty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can see all the like individual. Yeah, it feels more real, even though you can tell that's clearly a puppet. You know, it was like the CGI looks better, but it's not art in the sense that it took. I mean, yes, you might get the best
it's art still.
CGI
it's
maker in the field,
stuff.
But like
yeah.
a lot like, of it's like, I feel like you're talking, having a conversation with an AI these days or something. You know, there's like, okay, I need to feel
I think it depends on how it's made. Like, I think VFX is like definitely an art form, but I think that there can be a certain like soullessness to it because of it's there's like a certain intangibility there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's templatized sometimes, you can tell.
It depends, though, because I mean, like Smaug in the Hobbit movies, the dragon in the Hobbit movies is awesome. Like, I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch, like that's really good. That was really, really cool. But then when you've got like orcs that are just kind of like being thrown around like willy nilly and like this weird, but I mean, there was CGI in the Peter Jackson movies too.
Totally.
But it was like
but it was
different,
used like
it was
a garnish.
Tasteful. Yeah.
Yeah. It was tasteful. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And it wasn't. It wasn't stepping on the toes of anyone's art. It was only enhancing it just a little bit, you know?
Okay, well, I want to move on from the adaptation conversation because I feel like that's just been, it's been beat to death at this point, not even just by us, but by everybody. But it is a fun conversation to have, but I want to move also over to...
We're making glue with these horses over here.
I want to move to another bit of news here. Fury of the Gods, book 3 in John Gwynne's Bloodsworn saga, has been officially announced. Gwynne wrote on Twitter, quote, I thought some of you might like to know that a week or so ago, I finished writing The Fury of the Gods, the third and final part of the Bloodsworn saga. The last 2.5 years have been indescribably awful. So I wanted to kind of like shout out John Gwynne. Chad and I have read 4 of John Gwynne's books. We had a terrific time going through all those episodes, going through those books, having long conversations about The Faithful and the Fallen. John Gwynne's daughter, Harriet, passed away recently within the last couple years. I'm not sure exactly when, but I can't imagine how difficult it has been for him to finish up the third book in a trilogy when not only is it like a big project for him to finish this story, obviously, for any author, right? But for John Gwynne especially, I feel like he was already pretty popular, and then the Bloodsworn saga blew up. Like it is apparently leaps and bounds better than all the other books that he's put out, that he was putting out very consistently. Just kudos to John Gwynne. I've lost family members. I don't know if you're listening right now, but
definitely you are.
I have so much respect for John Gwynne. I don't think anybody was expecting him to finish it as quickly as he did,
especially with his particular take on storytelling. Right?
He has very long books, but I'm wondering. Like, I'm not trying to say I know how he was feeling, but I'm wondering if it was like a certain, maybe like a solace to like go. And I hope it was.
I wonder what part of the books he was writing. I'd be curious to know, like, what part he was writing when that occurred, to see if we could see like some darker themes put in there. Because, like, you know, the whole book is woven, is littered with opportunities to put in relevant themes to what he was going through. So I'm sure there's some of it put into the book.
Yeah, and I mean, like, same with Stephen Erikson. I think his father passed away when he was writing the Malazan books, I think around like the 7th or 8th book. And apparently those take a pretty heavy turn. But I don't know if that's going to be reflected in the third book. I haven't read the Bloodsworn saga, but I did just want to shout that out for anybody that's a big fan of those books. And also just a nod to Gwynne for getting that kind of work done during that really tumultuous time in your life. I mean, Like I said, I don't think anybody was expecting it. Hopefully nobody was being abusive or anything to him, like verbally. But I think it is extremely impressive and respectable that he got that book out and got it done. And I'm really excited to read Bloodsworn, because I saw something on Reddit actually today. Someone said that the Bloodsworn is smaller scale, but with higher stakes.
I would love that. That's John like Gwynn.
It was like ding, 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 ding in my head.
Give me the Faithful juice and the Fallen of your story, man.
Faithful and the Fallen was a little exhausting. It was just like a lot.
It was too many good stories.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah,
it was just too many.
That's a lot of good stories.
There's a lot of good stories, man. Everyone was really great.
Cool stuff. It's so funny. Like it's funny how like books that, you know, like I wasn't even like a gigantic fan of, there are still like four or five scenes from Faithful and the Fallen that are just absolutely stamped into my memory forever. Like that guy writes some epic, epic scenes in his books.
You know, like I brought up my John Gwynn theory halfway through Faithful and the Fallen, which is the guy loves a good battle, and his entire his books. My only problem with the Faithful and Fallen series was exactly what I said. There's too many good stories in it. And as a result, they end up kind of stepping on each other's toes and getting in each other's way. And it makes me go shallow with a bunch of characters as opposed to deep with a few, even though the potential for that depth is there. And so I feel like he just waters his own story down. And I was really struggling with that because it's so obvious when you're reading the book, kind of, that that's happening. And I was like, why is this a thing? And so my theory that I landed on was that he just does it all for the sake of setting up these huge, glorious, like three or four faction battles. And as the camera floats between the faction in the middle of the chaos, you understand everything because you've really taken the time with each character set to understand their motivations. And man, it really does aid your understanding and enjoyment of those battles, but it's a lot for a little, one might argue.
Yeah, I think Bloodsworn Saga, you know, with this third book coming out, I'd be excited to read those. I mean, have you seen the covers, like the Shadow of the Gods? I think Shadow of the Gods is the first book, I think, and then Hunger of the Gods is the second book. So if the third book, Fury of the Gods, has as cool of a cover as these, which I'm sure it's going to, I'm so, so excited to have all three of these in my collection. Are you seeing it?
Oh, they're very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really neat.
Yeah, that's rad.
Big giant monsters, man.
Dude,
love that on Book Reviews Kill.
Man, we love giant monsters. Dude, I love me a good... I think like the next book I really want to like sink my teeth into would be like a really good, tight, super punchy, like hunted story, you know, like one person being hunted. Like just like kind of like we got with Damsel, which I know you weren't a huge fan of, but like in that same vein, I want to read about
the premise was good. Yeah,
one person falling into a like maze and then like fighting as they get hunted the entire time against something super creepy like that dragon man. I'm really into that sort of story right now. Just simple, fun.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Know? I'm trying to think of any books that are like that. I'm actually kind of coming up short.
Maybe I should write that.
And anybody that's listening, if you have any suggestions, hit us up in the Discord, because I'm not sure. I think like...
Hunted. It's got to be a category.
I mean, I know that you don't read like a ton of science fiction, but I've heard that book, I think it's called Dead Silence. I think the author is S.A. Barnes. I could be wrong, but that's kind of one of those drop you into a scary like situation type of book. I don't know if it's like monsters or anything, but it seems like kind of like a creepy...
Looks really scary.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's on Kindle Unlimited. And I almost started reading it at like 1 a.m. and I was like, Evan, maybe you should just
And like, I don't necessarily want it to be terrifying. I want it to be high energy and a little bit of like, you know, there's demons.
There's a lot of books I've read like that, but not with like monsters, really. It's more like The Ruins by Scott Smith. Like, that's another one where it's like just these people in this really dire situation. You know, and like, how are they going to escape? And like, how are their dynamics going to like affect, or like The Shuddering by Anya Alborn, like those kinds of books where it's like plop. Okay. Bunch of stuff is trying to kill you.
This is all that matters. Even with like John dies at the end. Those are kind of like hunted kind of, you know, they're in like a town and the town's being taken over. But like, you know, I like the one on one. I think I'm really into that like head on head story right now. But anyway,
I would not do okay in those kinds of situations. I would die so fast.
Well,
there's no way.
It's either that or live. So it's gonna one of the two is gonna happen.
Like the dragon situation in Damsel. No, man, I would
think you'd rise to the occasion. You'd be like, Evan.
I don't know. I think I'd like pull a muscle in my back. I'm 33, man.
Dude, you'd be climbing glass shards, like not even hurting your hands at all, like she did. Like, no problem. When you need to go faster up a rope, you will all of a sudden gain the ability to not use your feet and just arm, straight arm. You know how hard it is to pull yourself up?
We're not
going to
rip on Damsel again. Okay.
I love the movie, though, honestly.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Tell me about your week, man. How you been doing? I know you've been doing a lot of things that you can't tell us the details of, and that's been taking a considerable amount of your time. So tell me about it.
All right. So a couple weeks until I'm able to make an announcement officially, everybody. But we got kind of a core audience here, y'all.
Many thousands of people. It's like there are a lot of everyone people listening.
But this is a core audience here, and so like I'm gonna level with everybody real quick.
Do it.
Okay. So I can't say any names. I can't say anything. I can't even say really specifically what's going on. I will tell you all, though, I have a deadline. The deadline is coming up very fast, and I am working 10-hour days right now on this, and it's a lot. I'm new to this. I'm new to this career, and it's rough. Like, it's very...
How's the self-motivation?
Man, being my own boss is really cool sometimes, and then also, I totally hate that guy. Like, I really hate that guy. I want to, like, stick it to my boss. But yeah, I mean, I just want to let everybody know, like, I know I mentioned this on the last podcast, and I know that you're probably listening right now, like, Evan, you're fine. Like, you don't need to keep explaining yourself. It's a thing that's been stressing me out personally, so I just really wanted to, like, be transparent and get it out there for everybody. I am sitting at my computer, and I'm working. I have to prioritize this thing that I'm going to tell all of you about very soon, but it has to be the number one priority right now. So thank you everybody again for your patience. I'm reading as much as I possibly can. To that end, you know, I'm not finished with Empire of Storms yet. I like it. It's not my favorite so far. I don't want to spoil anything. There's like some interesting developments that I just super wasn't really expecting at all. And like character interactions and stuff where I was like, oh, okay. Like definitely looking forward to Tower of Dawn because I've heard... I had some stuff spoiled for me. I'm not going to spoil it here, but
nice.
And Maggie and Amber, it wasn't you that spoiled it for me, by the way. Somebody else spoiled it for me. But I've also had some other Sarah J. Maas stuff spoiled for me too. So it's all just a big mess of spoilers. And I've kind of done it to myself, looking stuff up in the wiki.
It's hard sometimes out there.
But yeah, Empire of Storms. We're going to try our very best to get that episode out this week. We should be able to. Chad and I are both. Oh, you're not quite finished with it, you said?
I'm not, no.
Yeah.
I got a little bogged down in the middle.
I have a couple hundred pages left.
It's a little mushy. A little mushy and thick.
Mushy.
Yeah, man. Wow.
It's stormy.
It's stormy. Yeah, it's that.
So working my way through that. Memories of Ice. I just haven't mentally been there for that, right? Like, Chad and I both know Malazan is going to take us all year. So I've been kind of like, while I'm working really hard on some other stuff, I've kind of like put Malazan aside. We're not stopping. We're not on a hiatus or anything. We know that there's a lot of people in the Discord and a lot of people that are listening to the podcast that are still kind of catching up to where we were because we really were churning out episodes.
That's my hope. As more people are trying to use these weeks to catch up, then we are stopping from moving forward, you know? Sure, but don't worry, we'll be back very soon.
We're not going on a hiatus with it. Just mentally a lot to read.
Our pace is just going down a bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. But, you know, things ebb and flow. But, yeah, I finished The Crystal Shard by R.I. Salvatore because I've just been reading that to go to bed and staying up a little bit because... it's so cool.
It's just like nom nom candy, dude.
Also easy to fall asleep while reading it too, because it's so cozy. And so there's some pretty like boring parts to it.
Totally.
In its way, you know, like I feel like
10 towns arguing.
Dude, like those.
Yeah, like why is that even in that?
One of those scenes took me so long to get through because it was just like, oh god, you guys.
Reed just is like carving Scrimshaw. You're like, why am I here?
I know, it's like when he shows up like on the beach again. I was like, oh my god. Yeah. But there are some really amazing fight scenes and stuff in there, and I'm excited for Streams of Silver because that's the one where it's like, da da da, like we're going on an adventure. And then there's like other stuff that's going on in 10 Towns too, which to my recollection is pretty interesting. But yeah, so I did. I mean, I did read a book. Which was The Crystal Shard. But what I really, 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 really want to talk about, because I'm almost done with it, and I'm going to try my very best not to spoil anything because of my excitement. Dude, you should read The Will of the Many. This book rocks. It's really, really, really good.
Well, Island 10 coming through for you?
I'm going to make a whole big long video on TikTok and Instagram and stuff about it. I want to make as in-depth and comprehensive of a review as I possibly can. I'm not finished with the book. So people that are big fans of the book that are expecting me to go on about it right now, I'm not going to do that quite yet because I still, I have some thoughts about it that I don't think are going to get resolved until I can feel like
thoughts as in like complaints, like criticism,
not necessarily complaints, like kind of critiques, but I don't know if I'm there yet. And also this is first person, so it's kind of like we're in like Name of the Wind, like King Killer territory, where it's like, okay, but like the things that I think about this person, I don't even know if those are like really the things that I'm supposed to think about this person yet. It's an unreliable narrator, maybe.
Think you're being tricked.
That being said, dude, like Islington is like, he's like a completely different writer, and I think I said that on the episode before this, but oh my God, man, he's just, it's just rolling along. And it's, I feel like the whole book just like picks up speed in this way that like, at first I was like, this is, what the hell is this? And then we're kind of like going back and forth. And I was like, what is any of this? No, not like in like,
cause that was, man, I was like, by the time that he started adding that into Lycanius, I was like, wow, man, you were already so bold. And here we are.
The things that I really like about it so far, without having finished, the sort of, you know, kid with a past goes to school thing. Like that is like the heart of what this book is. It seems to be very based on Roman Empire stuff. That's at least the way that I'm looking at it. Something different, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like Roman Empire stuff. The hierarchy, the way that the magic system plays into the way that the society is built out, all these different rules, and all of that's interesting enough, but I think that Islington really went in media res with it. Like he really was like, all right, you know what, I'm not going to explain a ton of this stuff, you can figure it out, you know what I mean? Like you can figure out what I'm trying to talk about, like what all this stuff means. You can do it through the dialogue, you can do it through what you're observing. And I think that he did it in an extremely graceful way. Like it's just endlessly interesting to read about. So there's all of that. I think the pacing is incredible, the dialogue is really, really, really good. The way that this kid, this the main character, the way that he thinks about stuff is like, it's not like your typical, like, unassuming kid goes to magic school. No, there's like a whole thing going on with this kid. So it's like, it's really interesting to read about that stuff and like start to piece together like the old parts of this main character's life. So there's all of that. I really, really enjoy that.
Like, does he have like a different way of thinking that prevents you from being able to understand the story? Or does he have secrets that he's hiding from you?
It's his past, yeah.
Okay, okay.
So all of that I really, really love. And then for now, my only big like critique with it is like, it just feels a little convoluted sometimes. Like I'm not having trouble like understanding exactly what's going on, but I think that the names all, there's like different titles, and then there's different titles related to those titles, or excuse me, I should say there's different ranks, and then there's different titles associated with different ranks of those ranks.
Oh my gosh.
And then there's like, and then all the names end with like an IUS, or like most of them do, or like a US. And so it's just a little bit difficult to like a character will be brought up that I just forgot about kind of, or thought was a different character or something. And that's kind of on me, obviously, but I just wish that some of those parts were just, I don't know, it's a little more like ironed out.
Mariner, first class, Dutchy Central. You're like, dude, I don't remember your terms. Like,
there's just some conversations in this book too. And like I said, like before, I'm really putting on my critical pants right now. Like, it's an amazing book. Like, it really is.
You've been singing its praises.
It's an amazing book, but I will say, like, there are just some like pretty dumpy parts. You know what I mean? There's some pretty dumpy conversations where it's like, I'm just gonna get all this out right now. I'm just gonna like explain like everything that you had wanted to know about. That's fine. You know what I mean?
Is it well done or overdone?
No, I think it's great. I don't have a super big problem with it. I think it's just because, you know how, like, how do I put this? We'll do a food analogy because we do that here.
First time for everything.
You know how, like, when you get a meal that you're, like, really excited to eat, you've been, like, looking forward to it, like, all day, and you just kind of want to, like, eat every, you just want to, like,
yeah, get in me, yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about this book.
That's a great way to feel about a book, man. Wow, what a compliment.
But this is not James, a dig at Islington. No, this is not even close to a dig at Islington. It's more like, it's just, like, if it deviates from its breakneck pace for like even a moment, I'm like, oh my God, this is so slow. Like, this is so weird. Like, why are you telling me so much stuff right now?
I feel like when we inevitably get him on the podcast, which we definitely will, because
I'd love to.
We got really close last time. He was just too busy.
Probably writing this book.
You should like definitely look him deep in the eye and be like, I just like see those words and I just like need them to be in me. I just want to inhale them. I eat them with my eyes. I devour them.
I'm not gonna say that. Oh my god. But yeah, so I'm singing the Will of the Many's praises. Thank you to everybody who encouraged me to read this book, because I've got so much stuff to read. I'm so overwhelmed with things. It's so nice, and I know that a lot of people listening, and you, Chad, you know this feeling so intimately, and we're all kind of chasing this feeling all the time. And to have a book that I'm truly enamored with and look forward to so much to reading, I'm reading it very slowly. It's taken me a while to read it because I did start and stop initially, and then once I got into it, you know, it's a long book. It's like almost 700 pages, and the word count's really high. You know, you can't really like sprint through this one. You know, you got to kind of pay attention to what's going on. It's not like an overly difficult book or anything, but
I mean, a good story is going to earn that, you know, it's going to force you to kind of like, you're going to want it, and you're going to be kind of like slow about reading it, even because you're kind of sad that every page is going by. And man, you mentioned that like feeling that you're chasing, you know, that's a rare thing. And man, that I will ever give my money to a book that can elicit that, like, that wonderful story.
You should read it soon, Chad.
Okay, I will.
Really like it.
I'm
hyping it up. 645 pages or something like that. No, but the word count's really high. The font is really small.
Nice. Tricked.
Like, it's like deceptively long or short or whatever.
It's like nobody will know. Like, as soon as they open the cover, they knew.
They do. Yeah, I did. I've got a couple books like that are like Bible thin pages, you know?
You know, Evan's getting old. He's like, these symbols are so small. The S looks like the O.
I think I complained about that on the last episode.
You did. Like, but why sometimes is the they are really small. So small?
Anyway. Let's see. I covered all that stuff. Okay, a couple more things, then I'll give the mic over to you. All right, first of all, I'm playing a video game. I'm playing the Resident Evil 4 remake right now, which is just, like, it's so good.
Just like, love walking into a room and seeing a camera angle that's like shot up from the corner of the room, like at your waist.
No, Resident Evil 4 is, they, I don't know if you ever played Resident Evil 4.
No, I didn't. I think I've only played the first one or two, maybe.
Right, so the first two are like disturbingly,
they're like puzzle boxes filled with blood.
they're rough games to play, like by design. You know, they just, the control scheme is difficult. The camera angles are difficult.
They're exhausting.
The way that you open doors and everything, where like the whole screen goes black and the door's like,
shut up.
So, Resident Evil 4 kind of like deviated from that, and it's like an over the shoulder.
Oh, it's like, here, go kill these guys.
Kind of. I mean, like, this, you know, it's still a Resident Evil game. Like, I mean, they give you like 1.5 bullets and like 20 things to kill, you know. Sure. And you gotta, like, it's still like a very scary, it's a classic horror game. But the reason it's so cool, or at least the reason I'm having so much fun with it now, is because I'm getting my kind of like nostalgia bone scratched, but also it looks incredible because it was remastered, right? So It looks, and like I don't care
who you are with like those nostalgia like games. It's like the graphics matter on a video game, and you know when you go back and play one of those games you love so much, and you like don't even care about the graphics. Like you do, and you lament a little inside. You're like, man, I wish I could get this seemingly beautiful like splash water graphics on some of the old games that I love. So it's awesome that they did that. Go them.
I think like most of us have just been desensitized to, or I guess just spoiled with.
Totally.
I mean, like some of the graphics for these video games, like I just bought a PS5 and I've been kind of messing around with different games. Like I've kind of landed on Resident Evil 4. That's like the one that I'm playing right now. But I played Ghost of Tsushima for a little bit. And that is like one of the most beautiful video games I've ever played in my life.
Did you ever play Final Fantasy X2, like the remake that they did of that?
No,
the X and X2? You should.
I
haven't played
those. Yeah, there's some, I want to play Final Fantasy 15 still. Apparently 16 is really good too. There's a lot that I just don't have time for. Like I tried Ghost of Tsushima and I got like a few hours into it, like into like the proper like open world.
It's like a creep 'em, stalk 'em, assassinate 'em sort of game, right?
But the cool twist with that, it is kind of like a, like stealth mechanics are like encouraged, but you are a samurai and that style of like dishonorable fighting is like really like the main character's having like really big issues with it.
You, like, frown upon it.
Seriously, it's a really cool way to make the game because like your character is fundamentally opposed to the encouraged central mechanic of the video game. But yeah, the PS5 has been really cool. Some really amazing games that I didn't even know they were just like sitting on that console that I've been really excited to check out. It's just a plethora of them. But then also watched a movie this week.
What'd you watch?
Okay, so I watched Troy, the director's cut. Okay, cool. So here's the thing. So I've been building up my physical media collection by going to used record stores.
What does that even mean? What are those words put together?
So, I don't know. I like the idea of having like a Blu-ray collection of movies I really like.
Sure.
Maybe it's just the old guy in me or something. I don't know.
Definitely is, but I like it. It's great.
I like it. I think it's cool.
It's great.
Physical media is really awesome. I love it. So I bought Troy, the movie, because I remember liking that movie.
You're garage sailing?
If he had now, there's like used record stores and stuff all over town, so a lot of them have Blu-rays. But Effie had never seen Troy before, and I was like, I did that thing that you do, you know, when you have like a partner who you're like, trust me, I loved this movie when I was 14, and you're gonna love it today when we're in our 30s.
Oh, I've made that mistake so many times.
Okay, so here's the thing. So for everybody that's in the audience right now, that's like, Evan better not talk down to my movie Troy, the 2004 Troy blockbuster historical drama Troy. Okay, so here's the thing, everybody. The director's cut was way too much Troy. Way too. It was like 50 more minutes of Troy than me or Effie needed, and I didn't know it was the director's cut because I was like at the store. And I saw it was like $5. I just grabbed it and added it to a stack of Blu-rays and didn't think about it again until I put the Blu-ray into my PlayStation. And I was like, oh, it's the director's cut. This is interesting. This will be great. Like, maybe there'll be some deleted scenes.
I love extended scenes.
No. Don't watch the director's cut. The director's cut of Troy sucks. It doesn't add anything meaningful to the movie at all. Like, it's just like every single thing that I saw of it. Because like I used to watch it all the time when I was like 14, 15, because it's an awesome movie. I mean, it is a good movie. Like, it is
a great
very
movie.
Solid movie. Like, the fight between Brad Pitt and Eric Bana.
I remember seeing it in theaters.
Oh, yeah.
I clearly remember that.
So, but the reason I mentioned that I watched it so many times is because, like, I could tell when stuff had been cut and was kept in for the director's cut. And all of it was completely useless. Like, totally could have been left out. Didn't need to be in there at all. And another thing too is that when I put the DVD into the PlayStation, I leaned over and I looked at Effie and I said these words: don't worry, this is a PG-13 movie, so it's not that bloody.
Wow. This movie is about like the biggest like deception in warfare. Like, okay.
So here's a fun fact about the movie industry that I wasn't super aware of.
It's like dragged behind a chariot.
Okay. So apparently sometimes what these directors do is that they will film the entire movie like as bloody as they feel like making it, right? They'll cut off arms, they'll have people screaming, there'll be spears going through people's eyes, and they'll show all of it, like the throat slit. They'll see like the muscle and sinew and viscera and stuff. And then what'll happen is they'll take it to like the FCC or whatever, and they'll be like, here's the movie. And then whatever board of whoever in the suits around the table looks at the movie and they're like, okay, we're gonna cut this up because we want to sell it for PG-13 audiences. You made it too violent, you know, so we're going to clean this up. We're going to cut away at certain parts. We're going to make it just a lot more palatable for teenagers, right? The director of Troy went along with that, well, obviously, but the director's cut is his vision for that movie. And it is
in the back
so
of his mind, he's like,
bloody.
I will have my revenge.
it is like
they will drown in the 25 million gallons of fake blood.
There's so much blood in them. Like, there was like when the Trojans, like, spoiler alert for something that happened like 7,000 years ago, but like, sorry, that was really
just spoiler
great.
Alert. Fall of Troy.
The Iliad. Spoiler alert for the Iliad. But when the Trojans bring in the horse and the Greeks sack the city, in the movie, in like the theatrical cut, it's like a minute of them just kind of like running around, like sacking the city, you know, and like it shows some stuff,
destroying stuff.
Dude, just the director's cut. It's just like 5 minutes of just like pillage.
Well, we don't need the stuff anymore, so go to town, I guess. We got all these really nice cameras.
So messed up. Oh my god. Anyway, so it's just funny. It was just a funny experience because I had told Effie, don't worry, this isn't bloody at all, and it turned out to be extremely bloody. And it's funny because like I got duped by a director's cut, you know. But yeah, I mean, if you want the director's cut, if you want the you know, if you want to see it, go get it.
I feel like you were not wrong with your instincts leading you towards the director cut. Like, I feel like
I wasn't. No.
Initially knee-jerk, especially for something that I love a ton, only more of it could be better. It's unfortunate that, and like, what does it say about the movie, that the parts that they removed were like vapid and useless, and like,
they were,
you know,
awful.
You want them to be like, man, we're down to like the second, what can we remove, it's so yeah. good yeah. you know, and man, they were just trimming that chunks off. No,
there
problem,
were like,
I guess.
There were lines where like someone would say something and then the next line was somebody saying it, but like kind of the same way. Like, obviously they cut that out because it's totally redundant, but the director for the director's cut was like, no, leave it in.
Leave it. It's great.
It sounds a little bit different. That's enough for me. I've said so many things. Chad, please tell me about your week.
I find with any sort of like art where you're making something like that, it's so hard to be like when something is done, right? I have this problem where I'm like, I'll finish a design and then I'll make 30 variations of it because I'll add a black outline and a white outline and I'll 3D effect this one and a shadow on this one. It's like, man, I feel like it's almost an art form in and of itself to know when to pull it. Be like, okay, totally. This is yeah. done, you know? And like, man, to figure out, and especially when you have other factors like the monetary, you know, business cinema industry and the way that it should tells you to put a movie together, that would be very difficult and a stressful thing to do, especially when you like have so much like emotion tied up into every little bit of it, you know?
Yeah. And kind of, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because like relating to what we were talking about in the beginning of the episode, it's like these projects, like there's so many people working on them, and it's like, yes, there's a director, sure, but also all of those people have to decide when they're done. You know what I mean? Like the
totally.
All of those, like, I mean, I'm sure actors are like, we got to do it again. Let's do it again. Let's do yep. it again.
Soundtrack and guy, it, shitty ad. Most
artists that I've talked to, like musicians, painters, writers, poets, like so many people are like, yeah, I just, it's not quite where I want it to be, but it's, that's gotta be, I have to be done with it. You know, yep. And you're never really totally finished and nothing's ever really perfect. But I mean, isn't that good? Isn't that a good thing?
That is good. Yeah, no, I think because that's all means you're always pushing yourself. Like everything should yeah. be like, you should be like the most insecure about the last thing that you just arted, you know, because you're like pushing yourself at the edge of your abilities. It's hard to know when you've overdone it, when you put too much shine to something and you should have put a period on that sentence, so to speak. It's hard to define it, but you know it when you're doing it. You're like, this is not productive. I should be doing the next thing, not still working on the last thing.
Not productive. The way, yeah, you just said it perfectly. Like, okay, now we've reached, we're going back around the circle. You know what I mean?
yeah, totally.
But yeah, that was, that's everything for me. I spoke so many words. Please tell
no,
me
that's Chad, okay.
about your week. I want to hear about your week.
Dude, okay, so you've been kicking my bunions for the last few weeks on watching things. So I decided to just like watch a ton this week.
Oh, well, that's cool.
I just kind of sampled the pot a little bit. And you were off doing your thing that we can't talk about, that like everyone could probably guess with their first guess.
I know, I'm kind of ruining it.
No, you're not ruining it. You're trying to let everyone, because like you have an audience expects content from you because you've been in the like routine of making it so often for the last 2 years. And all of a sudden when you're not doing that, you want to give them an explanation of where you're at and you can't do that. And that's frustrating.
Totally. Chad, thank you for validating me. That's
bro,
this
I got
why.
You.
This is why we're friends.
What's your feeling?
So, we're friends
truth,
so
bro.
You can validate me.
Well, yeah, that's okay, man. If you can't fix yourself, fix somebody else. You'll fix a little part of yourself, you know? So yeah, you've been busy. So I figured I'd just enjoy myself a little bit, turn on my huge projector and just sit back to some awesome, awesome shows. And what inspired me, I'm going to start with shows. I'll end with my books. Cause I just want to talk about the Three Body Bout Problem because I started watching it and finished watching the first season.
Let me know your thoughts.
I loved it a lot. It was, cool. I think I did it right. I started it and then like 14 hours later, I finished it. And I feel like that's how you should engage in that content if you can.
Chad, speaking of you validating me, my better half, Chad. Okay, so I swear we were sitting with the TV on and we're doing that thing that all couples do. We're like, what are we supposed to, what should we watch? We've got our food. Let's watch some. And so like the Three Body Problem was like this big banner on Netflix.
Yeah, totally.
And Effie was like, we should check this out. And I was like, are you prepared to watch all of it? Like right
dude,
now?
Because, right.
because I read
that
the book.
That was wise. And,
like I read the books and we're going to be confused. You're going to be confused. Like, so please, yeah, let me tell, I'm glad I got that out, but I want to know your thoughts on it. Cause like, I love the book so much. Tell me what you think.
I have not read the books, so I have nothing to compare, which I'm stoked that I haven't read the book, so I'm not playing that comparison game because I just sat back and loved it for what it was. It is a complicated story. Like, there's no way to, like, decomplicate that story, like, in its like at its core, it's complicated, and it's better for it. So like, it's not one of those things that you're gonna be like doing something else while like you're gonna be watching it if you want to get the most out of it, you know, because you just, there's a lot going on. There's multiple storylines. There's even multiple characters in different stages of their life at different times sometimes. And that stuff really gets a little confusing. There's seemingly alternate realities sometimes, and you're kind of left to wonder the like realness of them, so to speak. But it's a fun ride. And unlike the last season of Lost, it was pretty fulfilling in that like they keep giving you answers. They're not just like always giving you nothing and you're just like, I'm lost in a sea of stars. Like they actually tell you what's happening and you start like getting your guesses validated, you know?
Damn, that's really good. That's awesome. Yeah. That's the way that I would hope that that show is.
I'm shocked out of all of the things to create a show or a piece of content from that they picked the Three Body Problem, a really, really difficult thing. I would imagine like trying to, if someone was like, turn this into a movie, you'd be like, what? Like, can we not have a little bit more of like a regular story? It's amazing that they chose that. It's like, I really need to read the books because I just, it would be very difficult to translate. And I wonder how good of a job they did, but I think pretty good because I like the story.
You seem to like it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. You got to be in the right mood for it. I could see somebody just not bleak. Yeah. It's a little bleak. Yeah. That's a really good way of putting it. It's never not interesting, but a little bleak. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember reading it and I didn't have a whole lot of trouble with like piecing together like the plot. You know what I'm saying? Like where things were progressing toward and like the big developments and stuff. I was like, okay, I think I understand that.
Totally.
It was more like in the book, at least there would be these moments where it'd be like two scientists like talking to each other and it's just gobbledygook. Like, it's just, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. It's like Cixin Liu
is like clearly so
I know what they talk
me.
About. Like, I'm not, I know what they're doing. So I was going to say it. One of the books that like when things click in it, it's so satisfying. Like, it's so satisfying when something clicks together and you're like, that's why it's like, it's just, man. And every one of those books is like that. So I really hope that the show, like you just said, like you just gave me a lot of hope too with like your very cool description of the show. I'm excited to watch it, but I was worried it was going to be like almost like Chernobyl, where it's like, we're not smiling in this show. You know what I mean? Like, it's not happening.
No, I mean, it's not a fun fest. But like, like, obviously, but like, there's some very dark themes, but there's like, and surprisingly, the darkest of the like story groups is the one where like the most like hope and relationship and togetherness and like the reason for living is found in the one character who's like very early on pronounced with cancer and is going to die very soon. I don't think that's a spoiler because you learn like right away. But yeah, person who is going through that event and that the rest of the characters can kind of, because that person's very grounded in reality. He has cancer. He's going to die. So he's kind of always doing that. And his friends kind of revolve around him. And he adds this stability to the story that doesn't just make it a bunch of events happening that are weird and interesting, which it is. And there are. But it also gives you like that core juice of like friendship and a group of people that have a lot of history together and very complicated relationships, and it kind of gives that a home base. And so it's like it gets some pretty good feels going on because of that, and really adds a lot of depth to the story that you feel, you know.
I do want to let everybody know that's listening like what the Three Body Problem is. I'm not going to explain in detail because I think it's best to go into it with just not a whole bunch of expectations, but just very broadly, it's sci-fi. It is about first contact. It's just a really hard sci-fi look at first contact. That's what I'm going to say it is. Like, it's very, it's like the situation, like the premise is really interesting. Like, whoa.
It's a show about preparing. It's the show about like,
sure.
What?
Yeah. Like our global mindset. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, and how that evolves too. And like, it's funny. I was watching an interview with Cixin Liu, and I'm super paraphrasing here, and I think that this was translated from Chinese, but essentially I think what he was saying was like Chinese science fiction very much influenced by American blockbusters, like American science fiction, these big bombastic, you know, stories that are centered around an almost like central hero figure, and that's like a very Western idea. And then we've got like in Cixin Liu's words, like the more kind of like Eastern idea of the writing these science fiction stories broadly seems to be more about like the world, not like one
how
like,
it affects everyone. Yeah, right, it's not like very
one person. Like, but with most, you know, Western sentiments, specifically with narratives and stuff, we are kind of like we do kind of center it. You know, it's more individualized. We are kind of like centering it on like what does the aliens mean for Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum? You know what I mean?
Our entire society is foundationally built upon like the rights of the independent. You know, like the one over the many sort of thing, you know?
It bleeds over into our story. Yeah. The way that Zijian Liu was explaining it, at least I don't know if he was like trying to speak for all Chinese sci-fi writers or anything, or even all sci-fi writers from like Asian countries. But it seemed to be like his sentiment that Chinese sci-fi was more centered on like, okay, how is the world dealing with this? Another, like a good example of that from a Western, more Western author, Arthur C. Clarke, would be like Childhood's End, which is, man, if you like the three body problem, you should read Childhood's End. Sorry, that's like such a mouthful. But it's like not the same plot at all, but it's similar in like, similar with that, with what we were just talking about, like in mind, if that makes sense.
Man, what a compelling title. Like, he nailed it. There's just those titles sometimes that you're like, man, you couldn't like sit down and make that up. It just like came. Or like maybe it was the title from the beginning. Like, obviously it was the title, you know?
I think
it's
like, set out with that. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
so compelling. It's really, and it's like an actual mathematical problem.
Yeah. And then like The Dark Forest, the second book, that's a real paradox, which I think we might have talked about on the podcast before, but you should wait to watch the show because I'm sure they'll go into that too. And you can see, like, if you know what The Dark Forest paradox is and you know about this story being First Contact, you can start to like connect some dots and be like, oh, I see what direction they're going with this, you know?
Oh, interesting. I like that. What is the Dark Forest hypothesis?
Oh, so I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't like looked super deep into this, but it's essentially this, I think it's like a paradox, or like this idea that like if there is like this other entity apart from like your people or your group or whatever, you can't know for sure that they're peaceful. You know what I mean? Like you can believe it, but it's 100% safer to attack them first. Like, because they can't know that you think that they're peaceful, and you can't know that they're peaceful. So it's like this thing where it's like
there's a mystery there.
Did I explain that right? Like, I don't even
know.
Yeah, no,
you totally did. I'm looking at it up right now, and it totally means
element to it. But
I think you pretty much just nailed it, though, is that like you don't know what this mystery holds or whether it's good or bad. And like, you know, do you game theory it basically is the question, and just go in attacking, because that is the best like move for you. But it's also like the least compassionate move and could really, you know, do a lot of evil if you don't know what you're getting yourself into, just to go in guns blazing all the time. So, but man, it's way easier to shoot first and ask questions later, for sure, you know. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, but like,
you can feel that importance of the many sort of questions being held at bay there. And I really like that angle on it. Fortunately, he doesn't lose that laser focusness, that juice that you get from being intimate with one person, you know? So it's like he's really tied it all together really well. And it's just really creative. It's done in a very, very, very cool way. Keeps you going.
I think that's the guys that made Game of Thrones, pretty sure.
Totally.
David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
And everyone was all worried because they were specifically the group that did like the last few seasons. And so this was like almost like a redemption. Like, can they do their adaptation redemption? And so I guess the point is here, if they have something to go off of, some source material, then they're really going to do a great job.
They're going to crush it.
They're going to crush it, man. They're going to crush it. No, I think the three body problems, super, super fun. And it brings up a lot of cool questions. I would have loved it to watch it with you and like had some of these conversations, because I was talking about it with myself while I was watching it, you know?
No, watch it. I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah, you definitely should. It's also really pretty too. There's a lot of like pretty things in it that I thought were real fun. Sure. I also watched a show called Warrior that was on Netflix, and it was just like a action martial arts show set in like the Civil War just ended, so probably like 1867, right? It was 1867 when it ended, so like 1870 something. And so it's in San Francisco, and it's all about the Chinatown area there and the factions of power within it. And it was like, it attracted me because it was written, it said Bruce Lee wrote it, like in the description or whatever, and I was like, oh nice, my man Bruce. That's like, I feel a little misled because like Bruce Lee wrote a 8-page like treatise about a story about himself, about like he was like going into the old American West. He really loved the West and was like a Chinese kung fu master who traveled to America to like liberate Chinese workers being exploited by the Tongs, you know, these gangs. Yeah, it was, he had very little to do with the Netflix production, but still it's a lot of really cool fighting.
You know what looks better on a description in on Netflix is the words Bruce Lee. That'll get people, man. That'll get asses in seats.
It got me, man.
It did.
Or like Ong Bak. Oh man,
I've never seen that.
Really, any of them?
Yeah, no, never seen it.
I think it's four of them, and they're very good. They're very good. Every one of them's awesome.
Right.
Different. The last two are a little like chaotic. There was some turmoil on set during the shooting of those that we will not get into right now.
That's fine.
Okay. I gotta make fun of the three body problem before we move on. I love how they always like, in order to make their super fringe, like probably definitely not going to work plan even kind of possible, they need like some like technology that like we just haven't got there yet. But there's always like this one scientist who's like, well, I've got the prototype ready. This happens multiple times. Like, we need like a cryo freezing chamber, and like boom, we got one. The monkey's been in there 3 months, like perfect, still alive.
Yeah, it's funny, those kinds of things in TV shows, I'm always like, I'm kind of like of one mind with you too, where I'm like, wow, that's kind of ridiculous. But then also I think about the absolute like plethora of secrets that the U.S. government is probably keeping from, you know what I mean, like the just totally ridiculous stuff that they've probably got sitting in bunkers I've never even thought about before. And like, they're like, in those situations, like they probably would be like, oh yeah, if we actually do have like a weird teleportation device we've been kind of messing around with, but we just haven't put it out yet because we want to keep making money off of oil and stuff, you know what I mean?
Totally. It's funny to see them use like super, like I don't know, super advanced like and not necessarily true particle physics, like quantum physic theories, and like make technology based off them. There's some really good attempts in there. It's like very much like reminiscent to how Jules Verne would write, except the cutting edge of the technology was like a gas flashlight that didn't like blow up, you know, when you found some smoke or something, when you found some gas.
A ballpoint pen.
Yeah.
My goodness. My word.
You know, we're operating on a little bit of a different level now. And to Sinjin lose credit, he must be extremely intelligent and working at the cutting edge, because they'll be like, I mean, he mentions things like higher dimensions, and it's like nobody knows anything. Like, we can't even, like, we're not even equipped, I feel like, you know. But he does a good job at explaining something that he doesn't even understand, or no one does, I feel like, you know. So go him, man. That's imagination and smarts right there, and it is impressive. So, you know, if you're looking for a bunch of battles, go watch Warrior, but don't be fooled into thinking that it's some like esoteric works by the late great Bruce Lee. I also finished up The Last of Us, and man, dude, I've never been more like satisfied with the quality of what the production that I just saw, but so amazing. Like it had turmoil inside at the feeling it left me with, you know.
Oh yeah, no, you perfectly described my feelings about it. Couldn't have done
man
it
is like drinking mucky water and just like loving it, you know.
It's painful. That show was so difficult to watch, but I loved every single second of that show. So
I was like actively crying at times.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, for sure, man. Like it was,
wow.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
It's a very powerful show.
Yeah. And how they're still making new stuff about dystopian futures that are like zombified. Like, it's amazing, man. The skill, the art is great in that.
I'm starting to think that the people are worse than the zombies.
Straight up.
That is cuddling. Okay.
Yeah, dude, I know, for real. The real monsters out here.
We know.
We get it. Yeah, no. The one that does the most damage to the planet. We got it.
That show is absolutely incredible, though. Like, wow. I love it so much. I can't speak highly enough about it. I'm really happy that you finished it, dude. That's so cool.
Yeah, I, man, like I said, I wouldn't watch it while you're having a bummer week, or like you're being very self-introspective.
No.
Like, man, yeah, it's so...
I don't think we've actually officially announced this on the podcast yet, but me and Chad and Effie are actually going to be doing the House of the Dragon episodes weekly as they come out.
Oh, hell yeah, we will.
For the podcast, yeah. So Effie's going to be joining us on those episodes. I think it'll be so much fun. June 16th, I think.
June 16th.
So we'll be doing that for House of the Dragon. I know this is a book podcast, by the way, everybody. But we're talking about it. This is a very...
Yeah, but this is also like a super sweet nerd stuff that we love podcast.
Yeah. This is a heavy... This is a show heavy episode. But also, like Effie really loves Game of Thrones because of me. Because I... pressured her into watching it.
Damn straight.
For
you
years.
Let her write.
I knew.
Maybe not knew. With the director's cut of Troy, but you certainly did with Game of Thrones.
But yeah, I'm excited to watch those. And then the reason I brought that up is because when The Last of Us season 2 drops, Chad and I will definitely be on here talking about those episodes too.
I also saw the preview for the new Mad Max. It's like Furiosa something. Ooh, I just
that
love
looks really good.
Mad Max movies, man.
Yeah, that looks really cool.
A movie that's just like set in a setting that's so boring that's just like all grunts and cars, things that I'm typically not really attracted to, and I just love it so much. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
I want to go see that like the day it comes out. Did you see Dune yet, by the way? Did you see Dune?
No, I have not.
Chad, what?
I keep forgetting.
Buddy.
I know.
Please go see it so we can talk about it. Like it's okay. It's gonna be like out of fashion by the time you see it. Like no one's gonna want to hear.
You'll never be out of fashion. Okay.
They're gonna be like, wow, they're talking about Dune like a month after.
What's
it came
the point
out?
Of being an influencer if you can't like make things come back into fashion by watching them, right? So that's what I'm banking on here.
Sure. Please go see it, dude. You have to go.
I'll
see
I'll love
that
it
movie,
too for
man.
Sure. Like I want
I
to go
know
see
you
it.
You will. Yeah.
Go there's been it. Days that I've woken up and I've been like, dude, I'm seeing it like noon, and then like 4 o'clock rolls around and I'm like, duh, you know how it goes sometimes. To the things that I read, it's what you know that I'm reading. Memories of Ice, I got some done that, but I was pretty easy this week and didn't really like go too hard on myself. Empire of Storms, I'm not gonna lie, it's not my favorite.
You don't like it that much?
Right. I just feel like there's missing with the story. Like there's not like real complex, like I mean, I'm not going to say human emotion because there is, but sometimes I feel like we go on the surface level, and as opposed to getting really deep a few times, we have a lot of things happen that are all kind of bad, that all get kind of growth, that all kind of puts a shine on our character, but doesn't break them down at their essence so they can rebuild and with butterfly wings, you know? And so
maybe it's a buildup. We still have two more books.
Perhaps. You know? Yeah, totally. Totally. It does seem to be more shallow.
Okay. I don't know if you were aware of this, actually. I don't know if we've actually talked about it, but did you know that Tower of Dawn takes place at the exact same time as Empire of Storms?
Yeah, because we talked about doing the tandem read, which I'm super, super glad we didn't do, but I did watch some reviewers who were like super into it, so I was a little...
I didn't want to... I forgot whether or not we had talked about that, but I just wanted to like make sure that you did know that going
totally.
Into... Like, while reading this, but yeah, I think I kind of agree, actually, with like the thing that you said about like a lot of littles, almost. Like it's...
Yeah, it makes it hard to care sometimes. Like I kind of get lost in it all.
I think there's just like this really long periods where no really big developments happen for like how long these books are. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and that's my problem, I think, is the length of them is like, it's fine to write a story that doesn't go into the depths human solution or whatever, the human question, or, you know, go super crazy with the philosophical ideas, but like, then don't take up such a ginormous space. Like, put your story in a smaller box, because, or else make it earn more. Like, make it give me more, you know? Because I need more if I'm gonna read more.
I'm excited to talk to you more about it, because, like, I'm liking Empire of Storms. I think I'm liking it more than Queen of Shadows, but again, like, Air of Fire has, like, been my favorite one so far. That's, like, that's the one where I was, like, damn, like, that was a really good book. And then Empire of Storms, I think, is, like, right below Air of Fire and above Queen of Shadows, and then the rest of them are, like, somewhere down on the ground. Like, so, I don't know, they're down there. Actually, no, I'm gonna take that back. Crown of Midnight was pretty cool. Crown of Midnight was kind of a banger, now that I'm, like, looking back at it. But Assassin's Blade and Throne of Glass,
Yeah, I mean, all of our stories have very high moments and very low moments, you know, but, like, the good stuff is really good, and the cool stuff is really cool. I will say, man, the woman's, like, very good at writing fun battle scenes, like large scale. It surprises me, actually. She's got like
her blocking is armies. Very good. It's
good.
Very, very good. Yeah, I know exactly what's going on.
Totally.
She has a real talent for it, for sure.
Yeah, and perhaps this is me judging her where I shouldn't, but I didn't assume that was going to be a particular talent that I was going to come across in these books, so it's like really refreshing.
Yeah, that's pretty assumptive.
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, totally, but like, you know, and it's great, so good on her.
We'll have that episode out soon. I mean, I think I was kind of cruising for the beginning, and then I saw, I think I have like 250 pages or something left. I'm like page like 400 something.
Okay.
And I think I feel you, like it is, I think I might have gotten through with the doldrums, but there was like definitely a part where I was like, what is going on right now? Like,
yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of like with every 700 page book, man.
Totally. Like, totally. Fair. A lot of it is like the depth of like a Marvel movie, and it would be like watching a 9-hour Marvel movie. It's like, it's exhausting sometimes, you know, it's like everything's so.
That's pretty fair. Like that's pretty 90. Fair, man. Actually, yeah. I feel exactly what you're saying. Actually. Yeah. That's because I love me some Marvel movies.
I love me some Marvel movies, man. They really have their
like
time and place.
Would I read an 800 page Marvel book?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, man, that's a lot for a little, you know? Anyway.
Oh, I never really thought about it like that. Yeah.
Enjoying it, but I certainly have my critiques. I've also, the main juice of my announcement, I guess, here is I'm going to have Alexander Darwin, the writer of the Combat Codes, onto the podcast. I have not locked in the date, but I'm quite certain that unless things come up and get in our way, that it will be next Wednesday, the 3rd, which we'll record the episode on. My plan is to have it out by that weekend. So look for it like Thursday, Friday sometime. Cool. And we're going to be talking about the Combat Codes, of which he has the first one out. The second one came out in December 5th of last year, which I'm about halfway through. And then he's writing the third one right now, which he told me.
I'm so excited for you guys.
Dude, I'm really, really stoked. I can just tell from the way that he writes that we're going to be kindred souls. We have a lot of similar interests that are foundational as far as like we're going to be homies, you know. Yeah, so it's going to be great. I'm really excited to talk to him, and I'm going to try to get into his brain a little bit and have him like, I want to know how he writes his battles and like what he's doing in his head, because it's different, I think, than a lot of people. And I'm going to try to pry some things out of him, you know. So I'm really looking forward to that, so make sure you check it out. Join up for that.
All right. So we have a question from the Discord here.
Oh, nice.
And we also have a fictional fun fact. So,
wow.
I know. I want to kind of pad these episodes out a little bit more. You know, we're not doing like as consistent of a job as we maybe could be. So
we just want to make sure we just can't read a book every week. You know, we're not maybe amazing them with the amount we're reading.
Okay. So we have the fun fact here, which I want to read because of my daily schedule right now, which is not even anything close to Ursula Le Guin's daily writing schedule. This was Le Guin's daily writing schedule, for which first appeared in an interview she gave in 1988. So get a load of this. By the way, this is not my writing schedule. mine is the opposite. Ursula Le Guin woke up at 5:30 in the morning, and it says, wake up and lie there and think. So she did that for 45 minutes.
Wow, fall back asleep. That's amazing.
And then at 6:15 a.m. it says, get up and eat breakfast. In parentheses, it says lots. So she ate a really big breakfast. And so she took about an hour to do that. And then at 7:15 a.m., get to work writing. Take a lunch at noon. So that is 4 hours and 45 minutes of writing. And then we've got 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. PM is reading, and just says music. So I assume both at the same time, or maybe one and then the other.
Creating the vibe.
Maybe. Then we have 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock PM is correspondence, maybe house cleaning. So I'm sure she had a lot of mail, so that makes sense. That'd be like people put their emails in social media pages, I guess.
Totally, yeah. Responding to her email, just getting checked up on business communications and fan stuff.
From 5 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m., 3 hours, it says, make dinner and eat it.
Wow, that's awesome. A lot of time.
Love that. Love it. Take your time.
Totally.
Take your time eating.
And more planned times where you're not doing anything. Like, obviously, she's not taking 3 hours to do dinner, but she's leaving herself time to, like, have opportunities show its little face.
And then, okay, so this is my favorite part. So it says, after 8 p.m., I tend to be very stupid, and we won't talk about this.
That's 8 all it's, p.m.?
After 8 p.m., from 8 p.m. to whenever she falls asleep, of maybe 11 or midnight or something. Wow, that's an amazing schedule. I was just impressed at, like, writing for basically 5 hours straight. Like, that's...
dedication.
Like, yeah, my
will get great.
I have to get up and walk around, or like, you know what I mean? Like, I think the longest I can go about like 2.5 hours of like sitting at my computer, you know, with my fingers on the keyboard, but I gotta get up and pace around, or like, go eat something or go outside for a second or something. You know,
it's really good for you to do that too. Like just physically and like emotionally and like mentally, it's great to take like little miniature breaks every like hour and a half or so. Though it really depends on what I'm doing. If I'm into what I'm like in the zone, I can just like melt away those hours sometimes, you know, doing something on the computer. But you wake up and your lower half of your body is like totally numb.
I can feel it. Yeah. All right. So that was really cool. And we're going to move right on to the question from the Discord. And for anybody that's wondering, where do these questions come from? We have a channel in our wonderful Discord filled with wonderful people. And the channel is called Ask BRK. It's under the activities category. And there you can ask us questions and we'll probably answer them depending on like if they're don't be mean.
Yeah, don't be crazy. But like ask questions that you would think are awesome. We want people and we do have awesome people.
I can't handle it right now.
No, we're sensitive.
Okay, so we have this is from Dichan or Dickhan. I'm not sure. D-I-C-H-A-N. Thank you for this question. Dickhan, what sequel would you choose if the author let you have a hand in crafting it? So I think that what they mean by this is if the author was down and he wanted you to help him or her or them.
Do I want influence on something I love? I don't know.
That's a question. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I almost think I like
maybe not. Yeah.
Stick with the guy, man. Like he's doing a great job. I feel like my interference will only worsen my relationship with the thing.
Yeah. They might not want this is assuming they want our help. So imagine an author said, "Hey Chad, I can't do this without you."
Oh
man.
Great. Authority experience, Chad.
I forgot that we have to put this in a light for Chad where the author needs him so bad. It's the only way that Chad will believe in himself enough.
Help knowing where commas go, and I knew you were my guy, so
you don't know. Nobody knows where commas go.
Oh man, they're a mystery to me.
I don't know. For sequels, what sequel would you choose if the author let you have a hand in? Like my mind obviously jumps to King Killer or Song of Ice and Fire or Gentleman Bastards. I mean, I think with King Killer, there's not a universe where Patrick Rothfuss would let me help because it's obvious he hasn't let anybody help. But King Killer would be the most fun, in my opinion, to work on. Because there's just so much lore there. There's so many avenues that could go down. It'd be so much fun to like settle on something and be like, nope, this is what we're doing. Like we're just going to go full steam ahead. This is what we're deciding. So that would be pretty fun. I think that with Song of Ice and Fire, like I honestly don't think that after seeing the show and like thinking about it, so I'm kind of like fatigued with it. And like,
don't want to marinate in that world.
I don't even know, man. Like, I don't know. Like just have John and Daenerys like rule over everybody and give Sansa the north like that happened in the show. And I don't even know what to do with other people. Like,
it's not your baby and you're not going to raise it the proper way, probably, you know. And there's like a major nerd level of like respect given between making your own super detailed world and then like marinating in someone else's super detailed world. Yeah. You know, it's like one of them is an act of creation and really lauded, and one is like can become a little like, all right though, but like why would we learn Elvish? You know, you know, like like is that like a good, you know, whatever. Not hating on anyone who knows Elvish here, but you know, you can get a little bit too into one thing, and I think it's definitely viewed differently, that's for sure. But I think I would pick something for status, like that I couldn't ruin. So like the next Ghostbusters or the next like Boxcar Children or something, you know, just like super simple that I can just put my name on and be like, dude, I wrote up Boxcar Children. The entire Christian universe would be like, oh my gosh, that was like part of my childhood. And I'd be like, yeah, me.
I really respect that answer. I think that like also playing it safe on my end here, I think I would pick something like a one-off story set in that universe. Like if Joe Abercrombie was like, hey, I need your help writing a First Law novel, like a story, I'd be like, we can totally do that because that's not dependent. Like we'll have recurring characters and stuff, but you're not like carrying on a storyline.
Right. In someone else's world though, that'd be hard. That'd be really hard. That'd be kind of intimidating to just like hate on yourself through their eyes all the time.
Sure. No, I mean, I don't think I'd mind being in the world as much or working within those boundaries as much. I think what I would have an issue with is like character and stories and like like arcs and things like that. Like I think that's where I would start to be like, this is a little too intimate. Like I'm I'm stepping on too many. This is your brain. Like, these are your people, you know, like, I don't necessarily want to get mixed up in here. But if we were going to do new people in this world with the rules that you've established, like, I'd be super down for that. You know, like, that sounds cool. But like, carrying on a mindset or a growth, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to touch any of that.
It's trying to copy someone else's version of art is like
another person.
Yeah, it's like a skill, not really like, an art. It's like, yeah.
Like, this is what I think this person you created would do. Like, nah, I don't want to do that.
I just feel like I judge the heck out of myself constantly. There would be like unhealthy filters through which I was looking at the work, and it would be hard to stay true with a story like that, you know? But I could really smash out a Ghostbusters. I have a lot of trust in myself. I could write the hell out of a Ghostbusters or Boxcar Children.
Apparently that new Ghostbusters movie was like really bad.
That's what I heard, yeah. It looked really bad.
I don't know,
about it. I was like, wow, looks like they're making some really cool, unique decisions. Bold.
Yeah, it's not like I was sitting in the theater at like Dune 2, like, oh my God, I was excited for Dune, but like, can't wait for this Ghostbusters movie. Like, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's as cynical as I'm going to be about it. But Chad, I hope that you get to write the next one, because I bet it'd be really cool.
I would love that, actually. That'd be great. I feel like I could do a pretty good job.
I think you'd do fine writing Ghostbusters.
Totally. Yeah, man, maybe I should try to write really super simple thing. I mean, honestly, if I can give advice to anyone out there, not that I'm sitting on some pedestal able to give advice. I don't know if my advice is worth much, but for what it's worth, make your story as simple as possible. Every time that I've majorly simplified the story that I'm writing, my story has gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like, man, I really think that I can do things that I'm not very good at, but I think that I'm just going to be like great at or something. And I'm really not. And it really helps to make it simple. So I think that's probably a great place to start, honestly, making a Boxcar Children.
It's amazing your ability to overcomplicate things, you know, like not you, Chad, but just
just anybody.
Like it is pretty amazing, because I think that like, because maybe it's like a confidence thing or whatever, but like I feel like in your mind, you're like, this is already so simple because it's my brain. You know what I
totally.
Mean? Like it's not good. So why would it be complicated? And there's no connection between good and complicated. Like, no, you might've just made it more complicated than it needs to be. Like you really could cut some stuff out. You know, speaking more to the, this question about the sequels, before we go, I want to say one last thing about this question. And I would want to help with a few of the projects that I named, like King Killer or Songbirds and Fire or Gentleman Bastards, simply as like a hype man or like a, you know what I mean? Like, can we be friends? And I'll just text you a lot. Like
the guy in the background.
Like, I would text Scott Lynch like memes and bring him food. You know what I mean? Like, I want to help in like that capacity for those kinds of stories and just be like, hey, not trying to like ruffle your feathers or anything, but like, have you worked on anything today? Like, it'd be really cool. I'd be like his personal assistant. I go like, go get him Oreos and stuff. You know, like that's what I would want to do.
If there's any profession that could use like an encourager role, like I feel like the artist, like how many times you get like that artist who's just like doing drugs alone, like trying to scrap out a couple words for dollars, you know? And it's like, you know, it's kind of sets him up for failure just by like having him be all inside of his head all the time and kind of makes him go a little crazy sometimes. So yeah, I really think that you would probably add a lot of value playing that role. Seriously.
I would. Yeah. Maybe I'm projecting. Maybe I need that.
You'd be great at it too. Just encouraging. Yeah. So imagine how awesome your day would be. It's just like, I just go around encouraging people all day, dude. That's what I do.
Job.
Get pulled over. Your driving was awesome.
I think that's going to do it for us today, everybody. It was a nice juicy episode. Monday Morning Minute. Thank you everybody for listening to the Monday episode. And thank you again for your patience with the other episodes and their kind of delayed release. Really appreciate it, everybody. Thank you for being the most amazing reading community on the internet by far, easily.
Oh, like it's not even
a question.
No competition, man. We only have a top shelf, and they're our listeners are the top shelf. They're just the best. They're just the best. Unparalleled, one might say. Man, there's a lot of great stories out there. So whatever, which one you're flirting with right now, go hit it. Cause I'm going to go hit me up a combat code of a story.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go, read The Will of the Many. I kind of want to knock this out. This book is so good. I'm going to finish this and then move on to the other stuff I got to finish, even though I'm like almost done with Throne of Glass stuff, but The Will of the Many, that one's calling my name right now. I'm gonna go read that.
Next week you're gonna be like, I started The Way of Kings.
God, please, what, no.
Why? So there's some old classics calling my name. I can't hold them off forever, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. But anyway, until next time, everybody, thank you so much for being in our audience today. We love all of you. I love you, Chad.
So much. Love you, Evan.
I'm gonna go. That's going to be the end of the episode.
Let's go.
Done talking.
Bye, everybody.
I hope you have an amazing rest of your day, folks. And of course, happy reading.
That's for bye, everybody.